It's time to go full speed ahead with Michael Kelly. Each week, the Vice President of Athletics takes you inside the goings-on at USF. Now with this week's guest, here's Michael.
Okay, so on this week's episode of Bull Speed Ahead, you know, we like to find a different topic that we can always bring that brings the reality of what's happening in our athletic department, how we're best serving our student athletes, and really wanted to focus this episode this week on nutrition and how to maximize what we put into our bodies and how that's helping our Bulls perform at the very highest level. And to do that, our special guests are Connor Blake and Jordan Laufenberg, who are integral members of our team through our athletic medicine group to really focus exclusively on sports nutrition. And thought it would be good to not only hear what we do here at USF, but to really let our listeners understand the way the industry has just grown and the specialization of what you guys have chosen as your career path has had on the industry. So first of all, thank you both for joining us today. So as we get into it, can we talk a little bit? We'll start with Connor, and Connor, just kind of explain what your daily responsibilities are now, but maybe talk about just the path that you took to before we were able to get you here at USF.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. My path to becoming a dietitian and working with USF is actually a little bit non-traditional for most dietitians. So I'm basically in my third career, if you will, of going into sports nutrition. I worked in business management, worked as a strength and conditioning coach, and then now have gone into the nutrition side. So my background to getting to where I am is a little bit different, but my day-to-day responsibilities, really primarily just to take care of the football team first and foremost and provide them resources, but on top of that is to make sure the rest of our student athletes of all the other sports are also taken care of with Jordan and I in conjunction with them. So while I have football, I also have a few other sports, and Jordan has the rest of the Olympic side, but day-to-day we're making sure that they have all the resources available from the fueling station to pre- and post-training nutrition, whether it's supplements or food, et cetera, and then also making sure that all the meals are coordinated appropriately depending on the time of the day of what we have and what we're able to offer during season or off-season.
And other schools you worked at before you came here?
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked at BYU before I came here. I was the assistant director of sports nutrition there. That was actually my first stop in the collegiate realm. Prior to that, I worked in the private practice sector where I worked at Michael Johnson's Performance Center, where I worked with the strength conditioning side and also the nutrition side to help guys get ready for the NFL draft, off-season training, things like that.
Well, interesting to hear your background, knowing that you have the strength and conditioning background, because as we will unveil here, you guys are officed in essence with right within our sports performance center in terms of our weight room and everything else. So the fact that you can talk the same language, not only with your student athletes, but with all of our strength and performance professionals downstairs, you've been one, you can relate, and when they're telling you what you need, you can kind of have that much more expertise to kind of, I guess, devise the right formula for each student athlete. So Jordan, tell us about you, because you've been here a little bit longer than Connor, but so Tampa might feel a little bit more like home to you now, but tell us about your journey here to this position.
Yeah, thanks for having me today. So I took a little bit more of the traditional path than Connor did. So I did my undergrad in dietetics at the University of Wisconsin. So like our interns here that are kind of floating around doing a lot of the fueling station related stuff, kind of the day-to-day operations, I did that actually when I got started at Wisconsin. So I did that for a little under 3 years with the athletic department there. Then I did my master's online. And then after that, I accepted a role with the Cleveland Browns. So I was an intern there for 2 years prior to coming here. And then I got here at USF 2 years ago. So I accepted the position here. I was a, you know, one for 500 at that point, it felt like. So it's really nice. Like we got Connor hired on, you know, about 6 months ago, a little bit over 6 months ago. So it's been nice, again, like you spoke on the growth of things, but now being able to provide more of those resources and provide more support to more sports. And obviously, as we continue to grow, we'll be able to continue to elevate that part of our program specifically.
Well, that's excellent. We're so fortunate to have you both on our team and others that help support you that we'll talk about in a minute. So backtrack to when I got here in 2018. Obviously, we had champs. There was some semblance of, we had relationships with Aramark there, but it was basically the same food that we were serving the rest of the student body. As I learned from our staff here, my own observations from the past, it's like, look, we're world-class athletes here. The difference between winning and losing is very slight, and it often comes down to nutrition and sleep and preparation. And all those things are things that we're all have evolved over the last 5 years, with the two of you being great examples of that. So we worked with... We started working with Aramark and other things to basically upgrade the food that we have there in terms of making it more more to your prescriptions, basically, and how we how we elevate that. But it's been that's just been one step of it. You mentioned fueling stations in both your opening segments. For our listeners to think back, it's been less than 10 years when we all had restrictions in the NCAA about how much we could even serve our student athletes, and it was really a famous moment in the NCAA tournament when one of the UConn players had said they were hungry and we weren't able to get enough snacks, and there was kind of an uproar, like, what do you mean? So I'm not kidding about it. It was an eye-opener to be able to allow and say, hey, why do we have these rules where you can give them a snack versus a meal versus fruit snacks? And it kind of became to the moment where now really we can do pretty much anything that we can find the resources for to help our student athletes. So let's talk first about what we do at Champs Choice right now, and you guys can divide it up a little bit. How do we dictate what kind of quality of food that we can provide our student athletes? How do you guys describe and work with them to design what foods are available to all the different student athletes? And then, I know we do the special kind of Tuesday night meal that you can kind of allude to, too. So maybe, Jordan, maybe start it off because you've been here a little bit longer, and then talk about how you segment it to the sports that you actually work with, especially, Connor, with you working directly with football.
Yeah, prior to me getting here, so Michael didn't go into it too deep, but the nutrition program was around here specifically about 2 years prior to me coming. That was I think one of those years was a COVID year, so
right. They
didn't get a lot of like hands-on stuff in the building. But the predecessor at the time had started that relationship with Champs, so they kind of worked on evolving the program specifically to athletics. So that kind of looked like versus your traditional dining hall, so like the Hub and Juniper or other dining halls on campus. So being able to offer, we call it an enhanced meal plan, or like it's basically when you sign up for the meal plan, like all of our student athletes are on that enhanced plan. Other students can opt into that, but that allowed us the money and the funding to be able to put more higher quality protein options, more action stations, a higher quality salad bar with fruit options and veggie options and different carbohydrate options that are more specific to sport. Prior to that, the dining hall was very much like your traditional dining hall, like, you know, kids eat pizza and chicken fingers. So kind of that transition happened right before I got here. And then when I got here, we kind of just started to continue to grow that. We started doing at the time, like football started doing dinners over there, catering dinners. So we got to be able to get more creative with the menus and kind of what things are we looking to do action station wise. So like this semester, for example, and Connor can speak to some of the other stuff too, but this semester, for example, like we have a pasta action station. So the rice bar, the pasta station where they can make stir fry every day, they can make pasta every day. That was like a big addition for this semester to give some more creativity, some more freedom for the student athletes to help. Food fatigue is real. So for kids to be able to fight the food fatigue and like get more creative with things to be able to keep them invested in what we're doing over there has been really big for myself and for Connor for trying to keep those kids in there and keep them kind of excited about what we're doing.
That food fatigue term I hadn't really heard. That's a good nomenclature to share with the audience. And be honest, flipping back to when I remember first having the conversation with the head coaches and then ultimately with SAC, there was a lot of resistance when I was like, hey man, we got to put more into our food. And part of it's like, hey, you wanted to make as much, in all candor, more money available to the student athlete. They wanted to keep more in their pockets for their own variety. But when we weren't eating right, I knew it wasn't the right thing for us to do, and eventually the coaches adopted it more, and now the student athletes, because of you being able to bring that kind of creativity, because with the student athletes, when I talked to them back at the time, it was very much, hey, it's the same stuff every day, I don't feel motivated to eat this, Mr. Kelly, and blah, 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 blah. So what you just hit kind of makes a lot of sense to me. So looking at, I know you work with other sports, Connor, but looking at specifically at football, how do you design on the daily basis? We can talk about travel here in a little bit, but what they eat, and talk a little bit, because while you're making avoiding food fatigue, you're getting them better stuff. How do you not only provide it, but educate the guys and ladies as to how to eat right? Because you can't be watching them over them every second, obviously.
Yeah, you wish you could watch them for everything, but it's unrealistic to think that you can. The fact that Jordan mentioned food fatigue is like something that I was 1,000% going to say. It's one of the most common terms that I use with the football guys, because the amount of calories that they have to frequently consume, that if they eat the same thing day in and day out, like, they're going to get sick of it. They're going to get some food aversions where they're not going to be able to meet their needs just because their body is resisting eating the same thing day in and day out. So in order to kind of break that up, what I've tried to do is bring in as many different resources and food options as possible. So, for example, Champs has sent me over their preliminary summer menu before the guys get back for us to review. I'm going through that and picking it apart, saying like, okay, this is going to be a repetitive item. This wasn't a big thing that was popular, so let's make some adjustments here and there. But the other thing to think about is, regardless if Champs was a five-star Michelin restaurant, if you ate that same place three times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 5 days a week, you're likely going to get sick of it, even if it had some of your favorite options. So what we do is we try to break it up, is where we do as many meals as we can through Champs, but also bring in some other items. So, for example, over at the MSC, we have different food options that we can bring in from a catering perspective for football's training table for dinner. So, like, if we want to bring in Moe's and have basically a build-your-own burrito bowl, taco bowl, we could do that. We could bring sushi in. We can bring wings in. So we can bring different things in to keep the freshness available. But nonetheless, we still want to routinely use Champs because they're going to provide us with the things that we can educate the players on from a plate perspective. So one of the things that's common in our sphere is called performance plates. And so a performance plate is our way to educate the athletes on how we want you to structure your meals based on what your nutrition goals are, whether it be gain weight, lose weight, maintain muscle, et cetera. And so we can kind of say, hey, we want this percentage of your portion to be carbohydrates, this percentage of your portion of your plate to be proteins, and the rest can be what we call color, which would be like fruit and vegetables that we can fill in. And so that's kind of how we do the educating in the moment. So like when I first got here, one of the first things I did was try to be available for every single meal and do what I call plate checks. And so guys load up their plates and say, hey, let's plate check. Let's see what we've got. Okay, what are your goals? Well, I need to gain weight. Okay, well, it looks like you don't really have a whole lot of this in here. If we add some of this will be more calories. These are better calories. Maybe don't go with this item, go with this item. So it's on-the-spot education. But on top of that, it's constantly just being available for the guys to talk to them. Because if it's not right there and right then at the meal, sometimes they're going to be coming to you, whether it be in your office, text message, call. I'm basically available 24/7 for these guys to give me options or questions. So we have a couple of players that, you know, if they want to go eat somewhere else, they will contact me and say, hey, I'm going to this restaurant. Do you have any recommendations from these restaurants? And I can look through it and, based on their goals, give them what my opinion is on it. So the job of constantly giving them tools in the tool belt to be able to take care of the nutritional needs never ends. And it's day in, day out, morning to night.
That's really cool insights. And so tell me, obviously more and more of the coaches have bought into it. They're using you more and more. Your bandwidth, we obviously need to clone you guys and get you even more support as we move forward in this endeavor. But now that they're buying in, like, do you all literally sit down with every athlete, or at least all athletes that are receptive to it, and basically do what you, I know you just talked about the plate checks and some of these more informal things, but do you literally sit down with them and say, this is what you need, and do the coaches currently give you that latitude, or do you work with your coaches to kind of mutually agree on a certain plan? How does that work?
I'll speak first. So a lot of our kind of other sports, because obviously I think one of the unique parts about nutrition, and I think Connor referenced it earlier, is just it's very individual, so not every sport is the same in terms of what they do need and what that looks like for them, because just from like sport to sport basis, you know, for example, football is like a lot of body composition related things, or like body weight is fairly a lot heavier of a focus in football, just because, again, you have to maintain the size, the durability to play football. But working with like a soccer student athlete or a volleyball student athlete, basketball, like all of those require different things in terms of they may not be as body weight conscious, but more so like recovery focused, or working on hydration piece of it, the recovery foods piece of it, just eating better overall. So if it's just a more balanced diet overall. So being able to work with the different sports, the way I do that is typically either one-on-one if I meet with the student athlete. A lot of students will like reach out to me and just schedule one-on-one. If not, I do a lot of team talks, is what we would call them, team talks or team presentations. So volleyball, for example, like we meet on like a bi-weekly basis, if not a weekly basis, where we talk to the girls specifically about Champs, for example. Like one of the big things was like, you know, making sure to allot time to get to lunch early enough, and then what do we eat while we're at lunch, because they have training at 1 o'clock, lunch opens at 11. So how do we navigate, we still need to fuel before we go into that 1 o'clock, but again, kids are having aversion sometimes to eating at that time frame because they don't want to feel heavy when they work out, or they don't want to feel overloaded. So being able to have those conversations with them and their team talks about what options should we be choosing, how do we get to breakfast earlier so that we can eat lunch earlier, so we're hungry when it comes time to eat lunch at 11 o'clock. So being able to navigate all those different factors, because again, the different sports
train at different times. So, you know, soccer's a morning sport. They train early in the morning. So the breakfast is a challenge for them, or track, sometimes breakfast is a challenge versus volleyball lunch is a challenge. So working through that on a sport-specific basis is really important.
And Connor, do you have a similar kind of team talk deal as well, or you present multiple team meetings a week, or how does that work out?
Yeah, with football being such a large sport with a large number, it's a lot more difficult to get everyone in for an individual team talk. So sometimes we'll do it by position, sometimes we'll do it individually. But like other teams, like lacrosse is one of my teams, I've done, you know, 6 or 7 different team talks with them based on topics that the coach feels like may be prevalent with them. But one of the things that, you know, Jordan hit on that I think is really important for people to understand about what we do in our space is like the recovery aspect. So a lot of people just want to assume food, fuel, continue to be able to play sport by through fueling. But the thing is it's a whole lot more than just that. We look at it from a holistic perspective of, okay, what's your schedule like? What times do you have classes? What times do you have practice? What times are meals served? You know, what are you doing for sleep? What are you doing for hydration? So it's not just nutrition and it's not just the calories, but it's everything else you do throughout the day, because a lot of times the kids don't understand that some of the things they're doing are additional stressors that they're adding to their environment, whether that be stretching themselves too thin for meetings or groups or clubs on top of all the requirements they have for their sport. So we have to look at everything they do from the time they wake up to the time they go to bed to make sure that we can give them the right information to be able to recover and fuel appropriately. So a lot of our meetings are centered around, okay, yes, nutrition. What is your calorie requirements, protein requirements, things like that? But what does the rest of your day look like? What's the realistic way to get those resources into your body appropriately too? So team talks are the easiest way to get kind of a generalized topic out there. Outside of that, when you do the one-on-ones, that's primarily what I do with the football guys. We schedule it based on their needs. Not everyone, you know, is required to come see us, right? They can choose to or not, but the ones that are invested in it and want to have, you know, things go their way and get everything checked off the right boxes, you know, they come see us. We do these one-on-ones. We run through an assessment form with them basically from, like we said, the time you wake up, the time you go to bed, and figure out how we can get those things stuffed into your day as a busy student athlete. So that's my approach more than anything, as a one-on-one. And the thing that I think Jordan would probably agree with me on is we don't sit here and just say, here's a meal plan. Like, here, eat this. This is your day from Monday through Saturday. Because what we don't want to do is create robots where if they have to deviate from that, then they can't make these informed decisions anymore. So what we really like to do more than anything, at least for me, I don't want to speak on Jordan's behalf, but I think she'd probably agree, is that we give them the ability to educate themselves to be able to make informed decisions whenever they go do these things out in public. So, for example, I have a generalized list of lean protein sources that say, hey, these are the protein sources that I want you to try to routinely work into your diet. Here's breakfast, lunch, dinner options. Essentially, you can kind of pick and choose from these. And we do the same thing with carbs, fruits, vegetables, things like that. But for me, that allows me to educate them on these are a variety of different foods that could be good for you, beneficial, and not just saying, hey, here's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Here's a meal plan. Follow that, because then they don't have the ability to deviate from it. So that's my approach to it more than anything.
No, thank you both for those insights on that. It's hard to communicate with. We have 500 student athletes now, so how do you figure out how to get to them all until in an effective way? You both, I think the emphasis this another great impact this program, the nutrition program, has done here is you both have mentioned the word hydrate since we've gotten here, and that's got obviously very little to do with calories, but a whole lot to do with health. Talk about that. I don't think our listeners quite understand the emphasis that you guys, and as a result, most of your coaches that I've seen now, particularly in the last 2 years, just really driving home the hydration message. So how often do our athletes drink? They're carrying around these gigantic bottles all the time. I know Coach Golish has spoken about his hydration test that I assume you guys prescribe to as well and the requirements. Talk hydration for me.
I think my favorite thing is when athletes, you'll be like, oh, how much fluid do you drink? Like, how much water? Oh, I drink a lot. And I'm like, so what's a lot? And they'll be like, I'm like, okay, if you use that bottle in front of you, like, how many? And they're like, maybe like 2. And I'm like, yeah, you need like 4. So it's just like being able to quantify that stuff is kind of a good starting point. But I'm going to let Connor speak on it a little more in depth, because specifically football is an outdoor sport. And they do quite a bit of in-depth stuff hydration-wise, mm-hmm. and then I'll speak on the other piece of it.
Yeah, so for football, we do hydration tests via saliva tests. We do that every day before we have an outdoor practice. So what we really want to do more than anything is be able to educate ourselves and our guys on who's in the appropriate condition to be able to go and participate in their sport safely. So one thing that we do, so hydration is not just our lane. It also is in tandem with the athletic training staff. You know, we work very, very closely on making sure our guys are hydrated appropriately. So Scott Wood, our football athletic trainer, you know, his team will do the saliva-based test. We get the results back. I also weigh the teams, the guys, the same day that they have these hydration tests. So we can look at if your weight is down and your hydration is down, then you're at risk for a potential injury at that point. You're significantly increasing your chance of getting
hurt. I think it's a huge point, but not to interrupt because I want you to keep on your train of thought, but a lot of times we just talk about, hey, just general balance and health, but it really affects just pure injury.
1,000%. And what a lot of people don't realize that even just a tiny percentage of being dehydrated significantly affects athletic performance. So as much as 2% of your body weight is lost via water, you now start having cognition issues, you start having reactionary differences, and not only that, you just fatigue and increase the chance of cramping, obviously, with having a fluid imbalance. But with football being an outdoor sport, us being in Florida, obviously we try to use that heat to our competitive advantage, so we want to be acclimated and hydrated frequently, not just whenever we're in season, but off season too. And so what I did last year when I first got here is I created basically an Excel sheet that was color-coded based on how much weight these guys lost at practice. So we weigh before and after practice just to see how much weight they were losing. And in the nutrition space, we call it, you know, you lose a pound, you drink a pint. A pint is a pound, that's 16 ounces. So every time they would lose, you know, 5 pounds, like, hey, you've got to get 5 of those Dasani bottles in you at minimum just to replenish the fluid that you lost from practice. And so we definitely had some hiccups when we first got here of guys trying to get on the same page of what was the appropriate amount. But the more that we educate, the more that we test, the more that we provide these resources and explain why it can't just be water, or why it needs to be more water than what you think, or adding electrolytes, the educational piece has now created them into habits that they do routinely. And so we use it as a way to check, like I said earlier, for their physical preparedness. Are they ready to go play, and are they at an increased chance of injury? Now, it's like soft tissue is a huge thing with hydration. So if we have guys that have a history of hydration issues and have a history of soft tissue issues, then now the strength staff, myself, Scott, we're all going to be watching them very closely to see how they go throughout practice or through a game.
And, you know, obviously like anything, it's always good to start drinking water and hydrating anytime, but it's not, my understanding of what you just said would be, hey, you can't start too early, but it's got to become a habit, because even if you kind of just think, oh, I'll hydrate really well in the season, you're still going to be better off by making sure it's a habit of life, because you can kind of catch up. I guess it sounds like you really can't totally make up for bad habits after time, right?
I think the thing like that people don't consider too is it's not a one day thing. So like, for example,
better way of what I was trying to say is like, man, if I just pound 3 of those smart waters tomorrow, I'm not going to be hydrated.
I'm going to be good. Like, especially performance wise. Right. So we have to talk to a lot of them about, you can't, you know, not be in your routine and in your habit the 2 days prior to a game and then expect game day to come and, like, I have all my bottles that day. Like, it's a progressive thing. So especially, like, on the basketball side of things and some of these other sports like baseball, softball that are outdoors, like, they could have games back-to-back. So understanding that it is an everyday thing, that you have to show up every day and be very intentional about it. The ways that we've kind of – something we've started to integrate at basketball, we just got – some hydration testers that are actually in their urinals. So it's a lot easier from our perspective, right? Because we have less guys than like a football team, for example. So it's a little bit easier to monitor, but it's a little machine that's directly in the urinal and they pee in it. They can pee in it as many times a day as they want and it lights up a color. So it's either green, yellow.
We're getting deep here.
Yeah,
So you call that a urinal hydration tester?
Yeah, it's called the Inflow. Inflow is the name of it.
Inflow?
Inflow. Yep.
I'm taking a little bingo card for this end of this episode, so I'm just marking it on there. Inflow. Gotcha.
Yeah. But it's funny because even the guys, like when we first got it, they were like, what is this? One of the guys was like, what do we need that for? We're doing a lot right now. And I was like, but now it's funny, like weeks after we've got them rolled out and integrated, the guys are like, no, like that's really cool. You know, like even our recruits who come through and things are like, we're like, yeah, like, go check out the bathroom. Like, you know, it's a highlight of our kind of a highlight of part of it's part of what we do, though. And the nice part that, you know, we went in that direction versus like testing them every day is just because like we could have a lift in the morning, but then not train until later in the day. So when we do like a hydration test, for example, that's only one point in time. And Connor can speak to this, too. Like, that's one point in time. So let's say you do it in the morning, right? You can't just go for the rest of the day and not do anything because you are green and think you're good to go. Like, you could be dehydrated. It's funny, one of our guys came up and was like, yeah, I didn't realize how quickly it happens, because he was like, I just didn't drink water for a few hours, and I went in and I retested, and it was already at yellow. So understanding and helping them to understand that, again, it's something that you have to continuously be on top of. So them having it in the urinal, for example, like they could test in the morning, they can test again when they come in before workouts, just to make sure that they're staying where they need to be throughout the day.
Well, like I said, it's been very apparent to me just seeing how many bottles I see being walked around here all the time by all sports. It's really, you seem to be educating well, and our coaches seem to be following your lead on that, which is really cool. So as we kind of wind down, let's talk a little bit about, you've talked about the daily food. You know, obviously this is still part of it when you go on road trips, and I've had the fortune of traveling with both of you, your teams on road trips, and kind of seeing what happens on there. And so, first off, a question to maybe both of you. I guess it's been somewhat universally decreed that 4 hours before competition is kind of the sweet spot of when people eat, right? So I've known that for a long time in my career. Someone just tell me who first adopted that, determined that, and why is that kind of written basically like code?
I guess I'll take lead on this, and I don't know who coined that initially, but from
we need to give this person credit.
Yeah, I know, but from like a nutritional sciences perspective, like that's allowing the food that you're eating to be a complete meal, fully digested, ready to go through the bloodstream and start to be absorbing. So like, for example, one of the things that we try to avoid before competition is fats and fibers. Well, at 4 hours out, you're going to have a full meal that has fat and has fiber in it, and it's going to be digested and not probably going to be a problem at that point by the time you go into competition. So the 4 hours is just enough to be able to get a full meal. Hopefully, guys get the calories in to be able to start that process of fueling appropriately. Should have been done, you know, well before just that one day, but that's also mm-hmm. a very important meal to have before you go into that game or tournament or whatever it may be. So that's where the 4 hours kind of came from, is just like enough room to get everything digested, fully absorbed, with minimal effects, I guess, on performance at that point.
And then, Connor, something you and I have talked about on the road that I've noticed with you that I hadn't noticed as much, frankly, in my past is like, look, you seem really prescriptive, not only in terms of the food that's there, but even the order and the way it's laid out in terms of how the athletes hit the rotation. And you know, tell us what the logic of that order is and why that's important.
Yeah, so the way that I composed our hotel buffets, I had it set up to where the fruit and salad bar were always going to be first, leading into, you know, carbohydrates and leading into protein. And the reason that I do this is if someone was to start with their plate at the salad bar or the fruit bar and it's completely empty, they're much more likely to put those items on their plate, which are things that we don't obviously get enough of, that we try to encourage them to get frequently. So you put those preferred items at the front so that way they have more space on their plate to load it. And then they go back, then they're the carbs, which we want to have as many carbs as we can tolerate before we go into competition. That's going to be our immediate fuel source, so we want to get those carbs in there. And then obviously the protein from a football perspective, we hardly ever seem to be able to get enough protein in because the guys need so much. So the protein at the end, there's a bunch of different options, but the theory is to be able to build your plate based on what would be the most appropriate to put into your body. And so the schematics of it, well, you would just walk in and see just, you know, a setup, a buffet, whatever you want to call it. There's a whole thought process that goes into it, and we have it all organized and signed appropriately. Like, you know, this is fruit and salad, just anti-inflammatory and antioxidant stuff. The carbs are going to be like energy. The protein's going to be like muscle repair. So these are signs that we put with these foods for them to educate if they don't know already. So that's kind of the thought process to how we set up just the hotel meals.
Well, thanks for that. And then, Jordan, for you, obviously, both here in the building and when we're on the road, I mean, well, when I come to your guys' office, I mean, you have a whole storage unit of snacks, which is really cool, and I'm sure it makes you very popular amongst our athletes. But to that point, hey, there's the 4 hour before, there's the order behind it, there's strategy in terms of what you've laid out to your athletes when we order online through Teamworks and that sort of thing to do that. But then you also seem, after the meal, both of you have – snacks available, and even it seems like relatively recent, because it wasn't this way when I first got here, even snacks, like whether it was right before they play, right in the middle of halftime, whatever it is. And so talk to basically snacks, if you will, both on game day and how you feed our fuel stations and all the other things. But then also give everybody insights, because we'll probably have to take a picture of your famous little new invention of the snack I mean, the snackle box. I'll put that on the bingo card too. But yeah, it's not only, folks, this is not just a box. It is like a tackle box, but you even got like a full blown like tool shed that you travel with now that goes.
I think we should get a sponsorship from DeWalt or something at this point.
Exactly.
Talk
about snacks. Because it seems like, hey, years or when I was playing or early on, I was like, man, once you eat that 4 hours before, then don't touch anything. Don't eat. Don't drink. I mean, God knows what. But hey, man, I see guys popping some fruit snacks right before they're hitting the floor or something like that.
Yeah. So Connor spoke a little bit right about the process of the 4 hour meal is where you can have the higher fat, the higher fiber, high protein, high carbs kind of big meal to get digested. But that doesn't mean that it stops there. So again, like a competition could be, depending on the sport, can be, you know, 2+ hours. So again, we have meal timing is what we call it typically, or like a fueling kind of timing for our different athletes. So we still have to be able to hit that even within travel and within competition. So that 4 hour window is pretty standard for, like, you need to have another meal or snack every 3 to 4 hours. So let's say again, some guys it's two hours, again, depending on what their body weight goals, their body composition goals are, what their overall daily needs are, it could only be 2 hours. So then they got to eat something again in 2 hours. So we can't just neglect that because it is game day. So, you know, being able to hit all of those goals, but then also going into competition is where our body is able to utilize more of those kind of quick absorbing options. So that's the biggest differences there. So when you're speaking on like the fruit snacks and goldfish and other options that are tailored specifically, you know, to each person, like we do the electrolyte slushies on the basketball end of things pregame to help them get more carbs, more electrolytes that will then get burned through right away. So those will get burned through within the next, you know, 30 minutes to an hour of competition. So just to keep their blood sugar high so that their body can use that and metabolize that while they're out performing. And then doing that halftime and then before the end of the game, before refuel.
And to some extent, I've seen not just the snacks, but even when you talk about the electrolytes, and you both alluded to it in different comments you've made today, it's almost like when I see either coming off the football practice field or certainly even at basketball on the table you set up outside the locker room, like every athlete seems to almost have their either you've catered to them or their own specialized formulas, if you will. I see them marked that, hey, this one looks blueberry electrolyte. This one looks like it's just plain water. I mean, is it really that refined? You've got it down to like almost every player as to what their kind of their likings are?
I think Connor can speak to this too, but I think that's where, as a nutrition program continues to grow, that's the goal. So like when you first start out, right? So like, let's kind of go back a little bit to like when I first got started being 1 for 500, you kind of got to do more of the broad interventions to try to hit as many people as you possibly can to help them and give them the resources. But now, like, we have Connor, for example, and then if we hire another person, you're able to really hone in on each sport specifically to, again, each sport uses different energy systems. Their practices are different lengths of time. Some are outdoor sports, some are indoor sports. So all of those particular factors have different requirements. So being able to really him to individualize for the weight gain guys versus the weight loss guys, that has to be different. You know, if it's guys who need more focus on recovery, if they have, you know, reoccurring injury history or maintenance stuff that they need in the training room, like we have to be able to tailor all of our interventions to help that person to be successful in what they're doing, to help them, the longevity, the durability, the recovery piece of that is all has to be an individual basis in order to really optimize. Again, you mentioned earlier, right, like the performance edge, that's where that comes in. That individualization is that performance edge for that person. How do we find what that one thing is that is their performance edge over the other person?
Well, organically through this conversation, you guys have kind of led to the evolution of the program here. You've kind of shown how increased either bandwidth and or resources can lead to that much more individualization, which ultimately hits the peak of performance and excellence. So that's really good. We're on a good continuum heading in that direction. But beyond the two of you now, you've been able to expand staff with not necessarily full-time staff, but a lot of students that are, I guess, interested in the profession or different folks that you can train or get. You just need the labor, whether it's getting snacks together, it's getting these individualized formulas made up. Talk about how big is your support help right now and how do we get it bigger? How can you encourage people to help you? And basically, what do we need from our fans to help this program grow in the nutrition area?
Yeah, so I will say that without having these interns, volunteers, whoever wants to come help with us in the athletic program, we wouldn't be able to do a lot of the things that we try to do on a daily basis. So you mentioned the hydration piece, how it seems individualized for every player. You know, Jordan working with basketball, when there's 15 on men's, 15 on women, she could be very more specialized and individualized with them versus football when there's 100 plus. You know, I have 75 to 100 of these electrolyte bottles that I make after practice, and there's no way I could do that by myself. So fortunately, I have a staff that, you know, they prep them, they put them on ice, they get them ready, they time it whenever guys come off practice. You know, Jordan has guys that maybe sweat heavy when they're indoors. I have guys that sweat heavy when they're outdoors, and so that has to be taken into consideration. So all of these things that we have to try to account for would be impossible if we didn't have a staff behind us helping to get things done. So right now I think we have probably about 10 for the summer. We had it up to 18 at one point last year, which was by far the most that this program's ever had. The thing that a lot of things can't happen without increasing the number. So the more that we can continue to serve these student athletes, the more that we have to have requirements for people to be able to help out. And the biggest thing that we need is people that are invested in the sports, and invested in the athletic department, invested in USF, and are willing to, you know, learn and grow and work in this industry. Those are the type of people that we want to come work with us. So the social media team that we have here on the athletic side has been great about posting for us to be able to advertise if we need people. But at the end of the day, resources are king. And the more resources that we can provide for these student athletes, the better our athletic program is going to grow. And so more than anything, if we can continue to donate to be able to push funds and revenue into the areas of performance, whether it be nutrition, athletic training, strength and conditioning, all of those are equally important in the performance aspect.
I think speaking like on their side of things as well, you know, it sounds like it from up front when you're speaking like, oh, to help stock things and make bottles and X, Y, Z of whatever we need from them. But at the end of the day, in terms of like their growth and development as well, like this is a critical piece of that next step for them. So understanding that, like, again, like I said, I worked as one of them when I was in my undergrad for a little under 3 years. And I talk to my interns all the time about, you need to do that and go through all of that in order to have the true understanding of how does the athletic system work? Like, how do these programs operate? So it's like getting our students to the point where even they understand, like, what times do we do things? Like, when do things need to be out? Like, what are we providing during different time frames? Those are all things they're not going to learn in the textbook. So it's like a lot of our profession, and me and Connor have spoken on this, and I know I think all dietitians would memo kind of mimic the same thing, is like it learning everything in this environment is so crucial, because a lot of that stuff's not in a textbook. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to learn it in a textbook. So being a part of that, like, these students are getting an experience that very minimal students get, and for the next step for them, like, that's huge to put on a resume, to be able to speak to those things. Because even when we're hiring, you know, we're looking for kids who have experience in food service or kids who have experience in a fueling station, things like that. So when they're looking to go out wherever they go after USF on their journey, like, those are all things that they can then use as they move forward.
And one thing that I just want to also kind of echo that Jordan is saying is a lot of what we do day to day is not in a textbook. She hit that nail on the head. And while there's a lot more growing education in sports nutrition and programs now, there's still a lot of things that you have to use kind of your practitioner's discretion and what we think is the best appropriate response for our athletes. And so that's what's really vital for these students that are coming and interning and volunteering for us, is being able to see that on the fly. Because if you've never worked in that environment, and let's say they wanted to be a dietitian, they didn't have any actual experience working in a fueling station, for example, and they go and get a job somewhere, and then now they're required to oversee that fueling station. Well, they have no idea what the ins and outs are on that, and they'd be flying by the seat of their pants. So now they have the ability to see how Jordan and I really go throughout a day, kind of in between the lines of what you would assume a normal day would look like, and get that insight, that information, and that edge whenever they do go full-fledged into their career. Now they have that under their belt too. So I think Jordan hit that beautifully.
Well, like most things, there's truly no substitute for experience. And, you know, in this overall sports industry, it was, you know, whether it's event management, even here previously, you'd see trainers, you might see equipment managers, but again, the whole point of the evolution of the sports nutrition program here at USF just kind of shows that, wow, the specialization of it has really grown. It creates a whole new opportunity of job growth and opportunity. And so to all our USF students out there, realize that this is another great way to get your foot in the door in the athletic realm and maybe open up a whole new a whole new perspective of a career choice for you, because as you two as dietitians, not only in terms of you guys have chosen to focus it specifically on sports and enhanced performance, clearly there's obviously the expert and the need for dietitians of all sorts for all citizens and all citizens of the world, so to speak. So, but hey, this has been great insights from both of you. We're so pleased that we were able to have people of your caliber and experience to be able to kind of build and grow this particular sports nutrition program to serve our student athletes. And I think you've given some great insights, not only in terms of what we do, what we would like to do, what we could do if our listeners continue to fuel us with the resources. So through Bulls Club, through donations that might make sense as it relates to different snacks or things that we can work with, and ultimately with the value of time from volunteers or interns that can ultimately bolster this program to where we want it to be. So to both of you, Connor and Jordan, thank you so much for joining. For those listening at home, you're keeping your business, your bingo card, from what I remember, we got food fatigue, we got performance plate, we got saliva test, we got inflow. You got to double check that one we got snackle box. And I think you called it an electrolyte shake or smoothie.
Electrolyte slushy.
Okay, electrolyte. Yeah, so I don't think you had that, Derek, coming in, but now you know, and that can be your lead in for the tweet to introduce this broadcast. So
I think one last thing that I want to really touch on that's been big when you're talking.
Is it good enough for your? Is it going to be
a bingo card thing? Okay, no, but just USF in general, and how you're speaking to how people can help and how they've already helped is. Coming here to USF, it's not every school prioritizes this. So, some schools, they check a box is what we say. It's I have a dietitian and they're here, they're available, but they're not really doing these things where they're integrated into the programs, being involved on the day-to-day basis, coaches and staffs putting money directly into this. So one of the things I think that USF has in terms of our edge over particular programs and what we're doing here, and again, we can't do that without all of your help, but is that we are able to really be integrated and put the focus on nutrition, put the resources into nutrition. Our coaches are saying, hey, we know how important this is. Whatever you need, you let us know and we're going to figure it out. So that's a big piece here at USF that's been really cool to see in comparison to some of the other places that I've been.
Well, thank you for saying that. Obviously, an observation that starts with an observation, and it takes support from all involved, and then also it takes execution, which you both are greatly involved with. So thank you both, Connor and Jordan, for appearing on this week's episode of Bull Speed Ahead. To our listeners, thanks for listening to this important part of the success of our athletic department and the way we need to continue to grow it in the future. We hope you have a great week, and as always, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.